The time is 6 p.m. here in Washington, D.C. You're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. My name's Garland Nixon. The name of the show is News Views on every Friday at this time from 6 to 7 p.m. And somewhere, I think way, way down south, I think there's a guy on the other end of the line by the name of Mark Levine.
I'm here.
Holy moly, Mark. How you doing there, buddy?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I'm with my family in Nashville, Tennessee for Hanukkah. I've been glad to join you on the phone this hour.
Wonderful. We got plenty to talk about. We've got, you know, Cuba. I'm sure, you know, you're going to probably, build a new estate down there in Havana and ship cigars here north to me. We've got, the president doing all kinds of things. Normalizing relations with Cuba as best he can. He's pardoned like 20 people. Released three of the Cuban five. I got to find out what was the deal with the other two. I mean, there's a Cuban five and only three of them are released.
No, the other two were released earlier.
Oh, okay. There you go. The whole Cuban five. We got a handful of them all gone. We've got, the president is, protecting Bristol Bay down in, over and up in Alaska. So he's doing all kinds of good things. I mean, certainly the president does some things that I don't like. But he does a whole bunch of things that I like. And right now he's on a roll. I guess he got to do something to make up for signing over the, changes in the Wall Street reform. But he's doing some good things, some progressive things, and I do want to talk about them. And of course, Sony, North Korea has decided to visit, their evil, deeds upon, the American shores. And we can talk about that a little bit too. But first, we have a brilliant mind here from Washington, D.C., an author by the name of Majida Johnson. And she wrote a great book. It's called Jump the River. It's a novel. It's pretty cool. We're going to talk about it a little bit. We're going to do 10 or 15 minutes and talk to her and interview her. And then we're going to go on with the political and social stuff. But first, let's start with Majida. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me, Garland.
Thank you for coming on. And you grew up in D.C.? How long have you lived in D.C.?
I lived in D.C. metro area for the past 12 years. Okay. I was actually born in Detroit, Michigan. My father was a journalist and he was in Detroit Free Press. And then each time he transitioned to positions, then we've moved a lot of times from Chicago. Sometimes we're in Chicago. St. Petersburg, Times, and everything. So I've been very fortunate to see a number of places, but I've been in D.C. metro area 12 years.
Awesome. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your book.
Yes.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this. So what caused you to write a novel? What motivated you to write a novel?
Wow. That's a great question. Well, you know what? I would say, firstly, writing is so very natural to me. It's... I don't really feel comfortable doing much else outside of writing. I could write all day, I would, or I have. With the novel, having grown up in a family where it was just natural to read literature, it was just natural. My father was always reading newspapers. He also had a radio show for 12 years, and my mother is an awesome writer. And so it was always very natural. And this book, it's always been in me to want to write and complete a novel. So I've given many years of my life to this project, so now it's moving on and giving birth to it.
Awesome. So yeah. Tell me a little bit.
Tell us about the novel.
Yeah, there
what's
we go.
In it?
Jump the River by Majida Johnson.
Yes. So Jump the River takes place in Washington, D.C., and it's about a young lady, Virginia Heaton. It's a suspense, and she works in an investment company, and she's dating this gentleman. He steals some files. Well, he's an attorney. And the company that she works for, these folks actually come after her and him. And so she's put in a position where she's blackmailed. She has to find this information. So this first story, she's being sharpened to figure out how to become a detective. And she also has some personal demons she's going through. So this is story one. And I've started the second novel, and I'm outlining the third one.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
You definitely can't trust those attorneys. I'm one of them.
Yeah, you're right. Crooked D.C. attorneys. Yeah, speaking of crooked D.C. attorneys, we got Mark right here on the other end of the phone.
So what do you think are the major sort of themes? Well, what do you hope readers take from it?
That's a great question. I hope that, well, I've started receiving feedback from my readers, and what I do wish, and which is happening, which is people do see parts of themselves in the story. My main character, the main character, Virginia Heaton, she also has, she's struggling with an addiction. And I think we all have dealt with certain elements of that, whether it be relationships that's covered, whether it be aspects of a job that, you know, you can't let go of. But also, I think people will just experience Washington, D.C. You know, my character lives right off of Georgia Avenue, but even folks in California to Midwest, all of that, I think there's some definite elements. So I would say the themes would be overcoming suffering, the theme of finding something within oneself to strive for, and also understanding that sometimes that which you desire, once you get it, is actually not what helps you to become happy. It's actually something much deeper.
Once again, we're talking to Majida Johnson, the author, a local author here. She's been surely been around D.C. long enough to be considered a local author. The name of her book is called Jump the River, the name of her novel. Excellent novel. I certainly would recommend it to all of our listeners. Jump the River, Majida Johnson. Where can they find it?
Sure. You can actually check out our website. It's www.fearlessartistry.com. Mm-hmm. And there's actually links to purchase the book. Mm-hmm. If you see me around D.C., you can definitely purchase one for me as well. I started my own publishing company.
Oh, that's awesome.
Thank you. It's just been very natural.
Mm-hmm. And was it a tough decision to do by yourself rather than go with one of the big publishers?
That's a good question. Because I'm relatively new, I'm unknown, I certainly got to a point where, you know, I did the searching for literary agent and so forth, and then it just was at this point where I was like, you know, I finally have the resources to be able to create this literary entity that can produce it itself. So I did a lot of research, had a great team, met a gentleman, Patrick Oliver. He is an awesome literary consultant and really started helping me put the pieces together. And I also have an outstanding mentor. So I just challenged myself and said, you know what? What's more important to get this book out? And it got to a point where it was ready. My creative team is amazing.
And your company is Fearless Artistry?
Yes.
And that is what? That's your publishing company?
Yes, it is.
So if someone else wrote a book, they could come to you and...
Yes.
Published through Fearless Artistry, huh?
Yes, they can. Yes, we are capable of doing that.
And let me ask you this. Currently, Fearless Artistry, are you kind of on the footing that you want to be at as far as who's running it or owns it? Are you looking for investors? How's it?
Oh, wow. Yes, I am open to investors. Mm-hmm. Currently, I'm working on, the sequel and book 3, and also I've been working on a film script. So, yes, I'm definitely open to branching out, and that's what Fearless Artistry really is about, is connecting with creatives and really expanding this.
Awesome. I'm certainly glad to hear that. So
Thank
we're talking
you.
To Majida Johnson. The name of the book is Jump the River, and she's a local author and actually doing quite well with the book. I understand that. I haven't read it yet. I've got a copy, but I understand it's awesome.
What's
novel.
The river, and why should we jump it?
Yeah, there we go. Why? You know, I was thinking of that. I forgot to ask the question.
Yes.
Jump the River. How did you come up with the name,
yes.
and what's it all about?
So this book had a number of working titles over the years. It's been a little over 10 years that I've been working on this. And I'm not sure if you're familiar, but Aesop's Fables, you know, mm-hmm. Br'er Rabbit, Br'er
sure,
Bear.
Sure.
So growing up, my sister and myself, we would come home, we would get some homemade zucchini bread, and we would have a book in hand. And a lot of times it was like folk tales and things. So I liked the idea of this kind of being kind of like a folkish, kind of a sing-songy, that it was about a tale, mm-hmm. But it was longer. I wanted it to be something that, you know, you thought about it and you kind of relaxed on it, but you're also excited. So with Jump the River, this is Anacostia River, but it also can apply to the Potomac, but I really wanted to speak to the elements of water, which I always have liked in works of literature, and also the Jump the River, it just, well, I won't tell you what my character does in her spare time, but everything just started coming together. So it actually came to me in meditation in a very quiet moment, and it was just very clear, and yeah, I think of
the Anacostia River and the wards over there, which after all are some of the hardest hit sections of the city where people are really struggling, And I would think if they jumped the river, if they managed to escape a very, very difficult surroundings, that could be a difficult and thing for them to do. So
yeah,
I don't know if that's what it means.
But I guess you'll have to read the book to find out. You'll have to read the book to find out, huh, Mark?
It means many
things. I guess so.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you something else I like about it. And it's because I read there was like over the summer there was this TV show called The Strain, and there were these books by Guillermo del Toro, and I liked it, so I started reading through the three novels. Here's what I liked, and this is what I like about that book. The character, who was kind of a hero character, was suffering from the issues of, suffering from alcoholism, suffering from, fighting addictions, fighting his internal demons. And he was still a hero while he fought those. And it kind of made it real, because rather than being some hero person in a novel who does everything perfect, the person in the novel was a human being with flaws. And so when I hear you talk about your heroine, whoever, person in the novel, character, mm-hmm. protagonist, whatever the case may be, mm-hmm. dealing with some internal issues or demons, most human beings have some issues that they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. So it makes it very real, and I think it probably makes it easier for people to connect with that. Because if they don't, they may have a family member, friend, whoever, who's dealing with some types of problems. And they know a person can still be a good person, a wonderful person, and a successful person, and still struggle with various and sundry issues.
Yeah, exactly. And the feedback that I've been receiving from readers, it's definitely been a joy to meet someone who actually has read Jump the River or read parts of it. And I didn't even know this person, or to walk in a bar with some friends and friends of friends, and someone actually walks up and says, "Hey, I just bought your book. I look forward to you signing it," or finding out that my grandmother in Louisville, Kentucky actually has a copy. So it's I think there's a number of elements that people will appreciate. I especially love, moving here and being in D.C., D.C. is unforgettable, so I definitely had to allow that to come through in my work.
But, I'm curious, as an author, and I'm not an author, but if you meet a stranger who's read your book, does it feel like that stranger in some ways knows intimate aspects of you? Like, here's this complete stranger you've never met before, but they've almost read your mind, picked your brain, seen your soul. I wonder how that feels.
Wow, thank you for asking that. It's still all very new, because the side of this book being actually out and seeing it actually in people's hands, mm-hmm. and seeing it on my friends' coffee tables, or peeking and seeing it in someone's purse, that part is new. It's a new set of emotions. It's something that I've always desired for other people to be able to read this. And I will be honest with you, each time that someone either posts that they've read Jump the River, something that they love, or they actually call me, or I get a text or something, I cry every time. I still do.
It's aww. Just,
let me ask you this. Is your book available over at Busboys and Poets?
I will be working on it. I would look forward to it.
Yeah, you got to get with the Teaching for Change people. I love them. They're awesome. And they have run the book over at they run the bookstores over at Busboys and Poets. They're great. They have a lot of really good stuff.
I enjoy
Busboys. And you certainly, Jump the River should be over there at Busboys and Poets.
Thank you.
For everybody to get their hands on.
Thank you. We'll be working on that.
All right, thank you very much. I certainly appreciate you coming on.
Thank
and
you.
So
hang
much.
Around
beautiful.
Hang around here for a while.
Awesome.
And hopefully you'll enjoy the show. But Mark and I have plenty to talk about, don't we, Mark?
We do.
Oh,
we
my gosh. Do. So we're going to talk about we're going to take a break here in about a minute. Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break, and then Mark and I are going to run our collective yaps for about 15 minutes, and then we're going to open the phone lines, and we'll continue to run our yaps. But
and we'll listen to our listeners and see what issues they care most about.
That's it. So my man Bill Witherspoon's over there making it happen. Bill, take us out. We'll be back in a minute. Mark Levine and Garland Nixon, the name of the show is News Views.
Live music is it. I'm not just talking about jazz. I'm talking about all music. Records has their world, but like live music, man, nothing but transform you like a live music experience.
That's the voice of the great saxophonist Henry Threadgill, reminding us of the importance of live music. Transparent Productions has been presenting the best live freeform and avant-garde jazz music in the D.C. area for almost two decades, and we're so honored that 89.3 FM, WPFW, your jazz and justice radio station, is serving as the media sponsor for our 2014 and 2015 seasons. The season, called Sundays at 7 at the Caverns, continues with a performance on December 21st by the Jeff Cosgrove Trio, featuring bassist William Parker and pianist Matthew Shipp. Music from their latest recording is heard underneath my voice. Again, this performance will be on Sunday, December 21st, and take place at the historic Bohemian Caverns located at 2001 11th Street Northwest in the U Street Quarter of Washington, D.C. All sets are at 7 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. You can purchase event tickets online via bohemiancaverns.com or get further information by going to transparentproductionsdc.org. And as with all Transparent Productions performances, 100% of all proceeds goes directly to the artists.
The name of the show is News Views on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. My name's Garland Nixon, and somewhere down there in Nashville, Tennessee, is one Mr.
Mark Levine.
Yes. And Mark, so, well, you know, I got plenty of stuff I want to talk. We got the stuff I want to talk about. Mark, you know, we got plenty, but Mark has taken an interest in the issue of Sony. So let's start off. Mark, you want to talk about Sony a little bit, and then we'll go on to the important things.
Sure. I was real proud of President Obama. I don't know if you, did you see the press conference today?
Well, I got the words right up. I think you made some interesting comments.
He did. He was very good on a number of issues. I wish I'd seen this president before the midterm elections, because he gave a great performance. I saw the press conference today, and I remember thinking, why didn't he give press conferences in August, September, October? But all right, water under the bridge. He said, and I think he's absolutely right, that Sony made a tremendous mistake in pulling the film. So for those of you who don't know, and how could you not, it's all over the news, North Korea hacked into Sony Pictures, did a cyber attack, because there's this film called The Interview, which is really a satire. It's kind of a silly comedy film. Yeah, it's a silly comedy about attacking. It's about actually spying and killing the leader of North Korea. And of course, North Korea really is no joke, because it's probably the most single repressive regime in the world. It's a brutal, brutal regime. But this regime then decided to hack into Sony. Well, that doesn't really surprise me. There are all kinds of hackers all over the world. China, in fact, we know has hacked into a number of U.S. companies. What really was surprising, though, what came next, is that they threatened the Sony if they showed the film. And to, I think, everyone's surprise, including the president's, Sony decided to cancel the pictures. Now, they blame the movie studios, and movie studios blame Sony. But let me just say this. I think that if movie theaters cancel films based on threats of terrorist attack, that is a threat to free speech in America forevermore. I mean, if the KKK says, don't show this positive film about the civil rights movement, or we're going to attack, and then suddenly they don't show the film about the civil rights movement, this is the kind of dangerous censorship that really is very dangerous. So I hope that all of us will call on Sony to change their mind, to distribute the film, at least distribute it by Netflix or something else. It's to me, a very, very dangerous threat.
Yeah, I agree with that, Mark, because I've always believed like this. If somebody threatens me, I'm going to call their bluff. Every time. You know, if somebody says, if you don't do this, I'll do that, then I whatever it is, they can forget it. I'm not going to do it. I'm always going to call somebody's bluff. Because I believe if you let somebody one time push you over, you know, on the street, they say, if you let somebody chump you once, you know, you let them take your lunch money one time, you're going to be hungry every day for the rest of the school year.
Right. So I think the Department of Homeland Security said it wasn't a credible threat anyway.
Yeah, and the bottom line is,
I'm not even a credible threat. I just don't think that's what we're
about. If somebody does that, so now what? Anybody who thinks about it can think, okay, all we got to do is hack Sony or whoever, and then say, don't do this, and then they won't do it. And I think that's why the president said they made a mistake, and he said they should have spoken to me first, because they would have surely said, look, they threatened or whatever they did, you got to do it anyway. Because if you let them...
Have extra security at the theaters if you want.
But if you let them shut you down one time, then you're really shut down. They own you from then on. You're shut down for good. You got to go forward. Whatever they're going to do, they're going to have to do it. And you got to call their bluff and say, well, you're going to do whatever you're going to do, but you're not going to shut me down. I'm going to do things. And so I disagree. I certainly agree with you and President Obama. They should have spoken to him first.
Let's talk about Cuba. because that was also not hasn't been a credible threat, at least for a couple decades.
And before I say before we talk about Cuba, I want to make one kind of broad statement about it, and that is, in the last couple months, the president has done the made the moves, changes on immigration, which were historic reforms. Recently he closed, I believe it was Bristol Bay, this humongous area. 40% of the seafood, I think, in the country come from Bristol Bay, in Alaska. And he closed that to drilling. He has recently pardoned or commuted 20 different people, who were who had life sentences for drug offenses. And if you look at what it was,
nonviolent drug offenses.
Yeah, when you look at what it was, a bunch of them, it was that said cocaine base. In other words, they were crack. Whereas opposed to if it was powdered cocaine, they would have gotten next to nothing, and they got life because it was crack. So, but the bottom line was he's the last three of the Cuban five, he's released them. The president, and he's made some changes, some EPA changes regarding greenhouse gases. He's struck the deal with China regarding climate change. Over the past several months, the president, I do gripe when he does things that I don't like. But the president has done some pretty darn progressive things, and he's really done some things that I haven't seen any president. I mean, if you lump them together as one big progressive package, I haven't seen a president really in my lifetime do anything like that. You know, make this start in this direction.
Garland.
And furthermore, let me throw this. And I think that what we're seeing is this is the direction he's going for his last 2 years.
Yeah, but why wait until after the election? I mean, these are things, and I think most of these things are very much supported by the American people. I mean, Bristol Bay.
Yep.
We don't want to lose all, like almost all of the U.S. salmon comes from Bristol Bay. There's so many other places to drill. I'm against offshore drilling, but why would you want to drill in one of the greatest fishery areas in the world?
Right.
I mean, this is a very popular opening to Cuba. Most Americans support that.
Yeah.
A lot of these, very few Americans support life sentences for drug crimes. Why did he wait until after the election to do all these things?
I tell you what I think. Here's my thought. I think it's the machine. I think it's the political machine, that Democratic, stupid, centrist Democratic machine, the same one that ran away from Clinton with Gore and lost, beat Bush, but it was close enough that they could steal it, the same one that ran Kerry with that absurd 2004 campaign where he tried to out-Republican the Republicans. There is a Democratic machine that is kind of centrist to right-wing, that is just shy of the Republican Party in a lot of ways culturally, and they ran away from the president, and I think they said to the president, look, just hide, just pretend you're not there, we'll run away from you, and if someone says, did you vote for the president? President? I never heard of him. Who? What? Obama? That name doesn't ring a bell. That these fools ran away from the president, and they asked him to hide and to lay low and not do anything progressive because they were afraid that the Reagan Democrats wouldn't vote for him, which they called them Reagan Democrats because they voted for Reagan.
Yeah.
But
and the lesson, of course, is we got shellacked. I mean,
yeah.
The lesson is running away from progressive values led to the greatest Republican house in almost 100 years.
I would be willing to bet that he probably wanted to do some of this stuff. And that machine, which unfortunately I will say this, which Hillary is the queen of, but that machine said, don't worry, just listen to us, President. We'll be fine, and we'll win, and we'll keep the Senate. All you have to do is hide under the table somewhere and just pretend like you're a Republican.
I'm agree with you, but I'm not sure I'm ready to blame Hillary as much as you
I'm not,
are.
No, I'm not blaming Hillary. I'm not blaming Hillary, but I am saying.
I don't think she's, I mean, look, I'm a Virginian. We've got two very moderate senators in Kane and Warner. Virginia's a purple state. It tinges slightly blue, but it's a purple state. I think it's them and the other southern senators,
yep.
Mary Landrieu. I don't think Hillary Clinton is that far to the right. I don't think that's fair. She's no Elizabeth Warren. She's no Bernie Sanders. I'm not saying she's on the far left either, but, I think Hillary is against a lot of the drilling and is against where, some of the Virginia senators are not. I don't think she's quite that far to the right. I don't think that's fair to Hillary.
Well, there'll be plenty of time to talk about Hillary. I'm no big fan of Hillary, but let me say this. I'll always say this. I only vote two ways, for the Democrat or against the Republican. So, Santa Claus can be running in 2016. If he don't have an R on his back, that's who I'm voting for.
Yeah,
So Hillary, you know, whether I like her or not, if she's the nominee, I don't want, you know, another Jeb Bush or whoever, one of these other, you know, Schmucky the Clown Republicans.
By the way, you heard it here first. Okay. I think it's going to be Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton. It's going to be another Bush-Clinton election. I'm sorry. I hate to predict it, but that's my prediction.
I don't think the crazies on the right are going to vote for Jeb Bush. He's
I think it's
going to
be Bush-Clinton. I really do. Could be wrong.
Oh, God. So I better start fashioning a rope. At least I'll use, like, organic material to fashion the rope that I'm going to hang myself before I have to, the day after I vote.
I think Hillary will be fine. I think you're not giving her enough credit.
It is what it is. We got bigger fish to fry right now. We're talking about President Obama, and we're talking about Cuba. What about the pardons? Look, the president issued 12 pardons and commuted 8 sentences, okay? All 8 of the – here's what he said. The Deputy Attorney General said, all 8 of these individuals meet the criteria I laid out under the President's direction when I announced the Clemency Initiative in April. They are nonviolent, low-level offenders who have no significant criminal history nor ties to gangs or organized crime. All have served at least 10 years with good conduct while incarcerated. All would have gotten lesser sentences if convicted. As for the 12 people who received pardons, none of their cases date from this century. 2 were handed down in the 60s. The offenses range from misappropriating bank funds to possession of an unregistered distilling apparatus. So they got somebody for, like, moonshine.
Oh, my God. Who's been in jail,
you know,
since
life for moonshine.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah, but you know what? But you can crash the economy from Wall Street, you won't get a day. But heaven forbid you make a little bit of moonshine, buddy. It's life with no chance of parole. Okay,
crazy.
But there's good things going on. What are your thoughts on Cuba, Mark?
Well, I in general, I think it's good. I think that this was a hangover from the Cold War that we should have stopped years ago. This is no praise for Castro. He obviously it's a one party government. This isn't a country that allows free speech or free elections. I'm not saying Cuba's perfect. Though in some ways Cuba's better than us. I mean, they do have universal health care, and therefore their life expectancy is shorter, is longer than ours, which tells you something, because Cuba's a very, very poor country. But obviously I always believe in free press. I believe in a free system. And I think the United States could probably do more good in pushing Cuba toward freedom by engaging with them than by boycotting them. My only regret is I kind of don't like it with the exchange of prisoners. I don't mind the exchange of prisoners, exchanging our spies for their spies, letting Alan Gross come
home. The Cuban Five weren't exactly spies, you know, if you think about it.
Well, the Cuba Five, they committed some violent acts. I mean,
they didn't. What they did was, all they really did was, they kind of infiltrated some pretty right-wing Cuban groups down in Miami and southern Florida who were actually planning themselves to do some pretty violent acts and had spoken about, I think, trying to rub out Castro or something. So they didn't really do anything other than infiltrate
two
groups.
I thought they took down a plane. I'll double-check, but I thought they took down a plane.
No. They did not. They did not. In fact, I think it was the people they were trying to stop. But people can look up the Cuban Five for themselves.
Yeah, I apologize if I don't know all the
details. And most of the WPFW listeners probably know about
it. In a minute.
Yeah, they're going to call us and say, how dare you accuse them of something. But those people are innocent as the driven snow. That's all I got to say, and they're out.
I'm glad we're opening up to Cuba. The one thing that was gotten, and I don't think it should have been at the same time as a prisoner exchange, but the one thing that we got apparently was they released 53 political prisoners and they promised more open internet access. I want to see more of that. I'd like to know exactly what they promised. If they actually promised a free press, if they actually promised no censorship, if they actually promised to allow the Cuban people access to the outside world, then absolutely it was a big victory and that's great. If it was less than that, I do wonder if Obama could have gotten a little bit more for the bargaining.
Well, here's what I would say. Whatever the case, we should open everything up. And let me tell you why. Okay, you can't go to Cuba, except under certain circumstances, then you had to go to the government. You can travel to North Korea.
Well, not really.
Yeah, you can. Dennis Rodman's there. Dennis Rodman. Every time you turn around, Dennis Rodman's is in North Korea hanging out with Kim Jong-un or whatever. Oh. You can travel to
Dennis
North
Rodman's
Korea.
An idiot.
You
can I'm go sorry.
To. Yeah, but he still goes to North Korea with not a problem. But
well,
heaven forbid you go to Cuba. Now that's the, you know, you take a boat 90 miles offshore. I guess you'll stay there because you'll be in Guantanamo Bay. But you can go to North Korea. So, I mean, anywhere you want to go, you want to go to Iran, you're there. You want to go to China, hang out. But whatever you do, don't eat coconuts on the shore of Cuba. That was ridiculous. What we got or anything, I think we should open it up.
Americans who go to North Korea or Iran sometimes don't come back.
Let me say that. Well, yeah, you might not want to go to North Korea or Iran, but you can go. And let me say this. And let me, we got to take a break in a second, but now I'm going to say some things that some people might not like. Let me tell you what I think about Cuba in the first place. What I think happened in Cuba was this, and now I'm really upset some people. If you look at Marco Rubio and you look at the Cubans in southern Florida, they don't look like the people in Cuba. They look like the people in Spain. And I'm going to tell you what somebody from Cuba said to me. They said, "Garland, let me explain something to you. When the Europeans left, they left white people, Spaniards in Cuba, who were running everything and taking everything, and all the money was going to the United States, and the people of color chased them out. They had all the money and they went to South Florida and they were mad. And that's why the people in South Florida all look like the people from Spain. And when you go to go to Cuba, the people look brown." That's just what I was told. Right or wrong, it seems to make sense to me.
There's some truth to that. No question. Throughout Latin America, you find there's heavy racism, and it tends to be the whiter the person, the more power
I'll just put it like this. We got to take a quick break, but let me say this. Look at the president of Mexico every year, and look at the Mexican soap operas, and tell me what those people look like, and tell me if they look like Mexico, the shorter, indigenous, browner, indigenous population and indigenous tribes who come over here. No, they don't. But we'll be back in a second. We're taking a break. WPFW. WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. My name is Garland Nixon here with Mark Levine. The number, if you want to call in, 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. And so I guess I probably upset some people and maybe hurt some feelings talking about Cuba. But oh well, if I don't do that, if I don't upset somebody and hurt somebody's feelings before the end of the show, I just don't feel like I'm doing my job, Mark. Uh-oh, I think I might upset and hurt Mark's feelings because he's gone.
I'm here. I mean, I was reading about the Cuban Five. I wanted to be accurate here. There was a conspiracy to commit murders that they were accused of,
right?
Well, they convicted.
But they were accused of it. You know how that goes. Okay. And so we have some callers. So let me ask you this, Mark. What are your thoughts before we go to the callers? What are your thoughts on the President Obama doing some very progressive things? God knows, Liza, I'll always say he's done some things that I don't like, as every president does things you don't like and does things that you do like. But President Obama doing some things that can be considered very, very, very progressive. Is this a pattern? Is this what's going to happen the rest? Is he going to, well, you know, granted he's got to sign some legislation we're not thrilled about, but is he going to kind of lunge to the left in his presidential, what do you call them, signing statements or whatever you call them?
I was glad to see it. He spent more than an hour doing an end of the year press conference today that I thought was one of his best. If you haven't seen it, it's certainly worth seeing. And it was a tour de force on everything from Sony and North Korea to Cuba to the taxes to working with Republicans. It was really good. Again, my question was, who is this guy and where have you been hiding him under a rock? I mean, I loved it. I do wish we'd seen it all calendar year 2014 before the election. My major thought was, where was this guy? Where have you been hiding him? I think the pundits may be right when they say that having lost the big midterms in 2014, he now feels free to show who he is, which is a center left, mildly progressive kind of leader, and I think that's great. I'm glad to hear it. The one thing, again, my complaint was if he'd shown it beforehand, I think we could have done a lot better in the elections. I think a lot of Democrats, frankly, stayed home in November 2014 because they didn't have anyone fighting for them, and Elizabeth Warren wasn't president, and they didn't see President Obama fighting for them. I'm glad to see it. I hope to see more of it. I wish I'd seen it before the election.
Okay. A couple things about Cuba. Who will be able to visit? Musicians and artists with scheduled concerts, performances, or exhibitions will be granted licenses to travel, as well as journalists, individuals working on behalf of the U.S. government, sports teams wishing to play exhibition games or conduct clinics, educational religious groups, many of which had already set up travel programs will have fewer bureaucratic hurdles to jump. Perhaps most important, business groups wishing to consult with Cuban companies or discuss potential partnerships will be allowed to visit. Unlike in the past, travelers will now be able to use their credit and debit cards while in Cuba. The U.S. previously banned consumer banking on the island. Pretty awesome. Let's start with Tesfa. Tesfa, welcome to WPFW.
Good evening, my friend.
Good evening, my friend.
Look, we hear about the North Korean dictator's cyber attack. This is because he is against the West. But the same attack, cyber attack on an Ethiopian radio and TV station beaming into Ethiopia on patriotic Ethiopians here in Maryland, in Germany, in Italy, it was attack after attack done by the Ethiopian dictators on the side of the West. And
but we want to get back to Cuba. So if you wrap it up, can you tell us your thoughts on Cuba?
It's something good because ganging up against each other, whether Cuba against America, America against Cuba, doesn't help people. Common people only get ahead in a peaceful situation where the elite is not fighting each other. The two people have to come together. We need peace in the world. We need to bring stability and peace to the world and stop this unnecessary attack against each other. There are enough criminals.
All right. Thank you very much there, Tesfa. And next we have, who do we have next? Ramey? Ramey, welcome to WPFW.
Hey, Garland.
What's happening?
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Eric.
Hey, Tesfa. You know, they interviewed some African brothers back in the 70s who were in the military, and they said they dreaded the day that Castro would fall from power because the Africans and the dark-skinned people over there are victims of widespread and pervasive racism, and they would just be no employment, no nothing. You know, just like it is in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, in the United States.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I couldn't resist that. When you threw that right down the middle of the plate, you know I had to take a swing.
Yeah. Hey, guess what? If Saddam Hussein had made a movie, you know, about offing G.W. Bush, we probably would have went over there and killed him way back when.
Yeah, you're right about that.
No. I think they would have shown it. We would have might have laughed at it.
Are
you kidding? Dick Cheney? You know what?
He'd waterboard you, Mark. If you want to do a movie about offing George W. Bush, you go right ahead. That's what free speech is all about.
Yeah,
you
right.
know,
Come on, Mark.
I mean it. I don't, look, there's all kinds of free speech ideas I hate. Don't get me wrong. There's all kinds of hateful speech as well. But you gotta allow it. You've got to.
In this country, if someone over there at Fox or Columbia had made a movie about, you know, a comedy about killing Eisenhower or whoever, or about JFK.
Have you seen the movies they've made about Hillary? They're not too pleasant.
They're really
pretty nasty.
But she's not the president, and they're not made in another country, who is an enemy country.
Yeah, 7 days in May, and what are they?
We have nothing to fear from Iran or Libya North Korea.
But I think Eric's point was this, and there's certainly some credibility to it, that had Saddam Hussein made some movie about taking out the U.S. president, that we'd have probably freaked out and launched. He'd have been lucky. They attacked him, and he didn't even do anything.
They made a movie with Florence Harvey and Frank Sinatra years ago, The Manchurian Candidate,
mm-hmm.
and it was pulled from release. It was out.
Okay, and that was wrong. And we all agree that was wrong. And that was what, the 1950s?
63, 64, right in there.
Okay, fair enough.
They said that was the pretext. That's what got Oswald going. This is what the theory was.
Well, I think it's very, very dangerous to censor any film of any kind, no matter how bad. And to show you the North Koreans don't really understand satire, The Onion, I love The Onion, The Onion once ran a piece on the sexiest guy in the world, and they named Kim Jong-un, you know, Jong-un,
because
it's The Onion, and apparently North Korea took it seriously and started, trumpeting the
world. You haven't seen him in his thong?
You know what? I think I'd rather undergo some of that.
Well, did you know this? The Three Stooges did a comedy about Hitler, and Hitler put out like a hit. You know, he wanted them dead.
Charlie Chaplin,
the
famous dictator, very famous, where they each try to get higher in the barber chair. Very famous.
Yeah, but Hitler wanted the Three Stooges dead. At any rate, so what have we learned is that tyrannical dictators don't have much of a sense of humor. And that would certainly include George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. But thanks a lot, Eric Ramey. Next, we're going to Arthur. Arthur, welcome.
Hi, Arthur.
To what's happening?
Yes, man, listen.
You're on the air.
Yes, okay. Before you guys get too much on Obama's bandwagon, let me tell you something. I'm agreeing with that preacher from Philadelphia. He's everybody's president except black folks. How many black prisoners is he getting out of jail? What is he doing about this? All the murders and all that stuff going up there in his hometown, Chicago, nothing. So I'm not all excited about him.
Well, thank you. Certainly welcome your opinion. And here's what I have to say. I've said this in the past. Well, two things, and then I'll let Mark say something. Number one, I think it's unfair to expect Barack Obama to wave a magic wand and to fix all of the things that's been happening to black people for the past 400 years. You know, to put it all on his shoulder and say, hey, you're the president, and now life isn't wonderful for black people, for starters. Number one. Number two, I'll say that, and I've said this before, FDR, for all that we all love FDR, you kind of forgot that he put a bunch of Japanese people in internment camps. For all the LBJ, the Great Society, let's not forget Vietnam War. Every president is going to do some things that you really love and some things that you really hate. And if you think you're going to get a president that's not going to do some things that you really love and really hate, then you don't understand politics in the United States. And if you think so, show me one out of the last 44 that did all really good things. It's never going to happen. Mark.
Well, first of all, I suspect a lot of the people that he pardoned, I don't know their races, but I suspect many of them are African Americans. Look, President Obama, the most important thing a president can do is, in terms of justice for the African American community, is appoint attorney general who is attentive to those concerns. I think Eric Holder, and of course he's leaving, but I think Eric Holder has done a decent, but not perfect, I'll get to that in a second, a decent job in looking out, and I think they're going to do a civil rights violation for the killer of Garner, Eric Garner in New York. I think they'll do that. I also think he's done a pretty good job in fighting for voting ID laws. I'll tell you this, though. There haven't been as many civil rights prosecutions as I'd like to see. There's only been about the same numbers under George Bush, which actually it means that President Obama's falling pretty short. I thought he would do even more, frankly. So the glass is half full. He's done many things that are very good, but I agree he can do more.
Right. And here's the other part of it. He's done some things, and I'll say this, such as health care. Have you looked at the numbers as far as black people and Latinos?
Yeah.
How many people, more of them, have health care than had it before? What he's done for black people and Latinos as far as the health care numbers alone, and that's something that's a real life day-to-day thing. So, yes, he can't fix everything, but when he does something that helps the poor, the working poor, and the working class, that's where black folks are. They're in the poor, the working poor, and the working class mostly. And so, like I said, I don't think he's a magician. I don't think he's Houdini. I think it took 400 years to fix. And if you look at the way a significant portion of this country is treating the president, he's even getting a pretty strong taste of it himself. So, no, I don't expect him to fix everything, and I don't hold him responsible for not being able to undo in the last 6 years what was done that started, you know, like I always say, the torture report for black people started in 1619. And I don't think he can fix it in 6 years. Who's next? Doug. We got a little bit of 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. Doug, you know, my daughter used to have a TV show that she loved called Doug.
Oh,
on Nickelodeon. Doug, you're on the air.
Hi. This is a different Doug, not the one from the TV show.
You don't have like a dog named Skeeter?
A small point of history. An earlier caller mentioned the movie Manchurian Candidate in that it was pulled from circulation when it was first released. This is the original version with Frank Sinatra in the lead. And then somebody commented that that was what set Oswald off. Actually, what happened was that movie was made and it was scheduled for release, and then Kennedy was assassinated. And Frank Sinatra, of course, was very close friends with JFK, and Sinatra ordered the movie to be pulled from release after the JFK assassination because he thought it was just completely inappropriate to put the movie out right after JFK had been shot, which, of course, kind of matched up with the plot line, you know, somewhat. So that happened after the fact, and it was Frank Sinatra who decided that out of his respect for JFK. He just didn't.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Doug. And by the way, I think it's one thing to say, you know, a movie about shooting the president right after the president's been shot is probably not the best time to come out, but it wasn't censored. We did see that movie as a classic.
It wasn't censorship. It was just that, you know, Sinatra made that the call.
It came out a few months later.
Of whether Sony, whether there actually is a credible threat to Sony from North Korean hackers, and whether Sony was potentially vulnerable to North Korean hackers, the thing you have to realize is Sony is vulnerable to some sociopathic teenager living in his mother's basement who is a hacker.
Right.
The term internet security is an oxymoron. It's something we don't really want to think about, is how the extent to which corporate systems, financial systems, the electric grid, all kinds of things that are online now are extremely vulnerable, not just to, you know, political or state hackers from China or North Korea, but just they're vulnerable to just idiots out there who go in and want to mess around with stuff, not even for financial gain, just because then they can go, you know,
they can brag to their buddies.
They can brag to their buddies about it.
And
there's much more vulnerability. There's this last year, I work in IT, and I can tell you this last year, there's been several things that have been revealed about security flaws that had everybody in the IT world going nuts and scrambling to try to patch these vulnerabilities that have actually, in some cases, been there for years and years, but just were not known to the public in general. So there's a lot of vulnerability out there.
The cybersecurity threat is real, according to President Obama, and I certainly have reason to believe him. This North Korea was behind the hacking of Sony. But to back down and not show a movie in theaters, first of all, I do think it's a lot easier to hack us than it is to, thank God, organize a bunch of terrorists and get them into theaters. I hope that never happens. But at the end of the day, if you back down on this, China's far more powerful than North Korea. They have more powerful hacking. They have more powerful networks to do harm to us. You know, if now there's a movie that's critical of the Chinese premiere and we can't show that, and then what about homegrown?
China doesn't have to do all of that. We owe them like $8 trillion. All they got to do is tell us shut up or they'll call us on our debt.
They can blackmail us in all kinds of ways, and the caller mentioned somebody in their basement. You know, what if someone in their basement is a white supremacist and doesn't want a civil rights movie shown and threatens to bomb the theater that shows it? Are we now going to say, nope, can't show civil rights films because we're worried about a terrorist attack? This is a terrible precedent, and I predict that Sony will reverse its decision, and I hope everyone will encourage them to do so, because this is a terrible, terrible precedent.
Bridget, you're on the air. Bridget.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Listen, I used to be I know that I'm calling into Obama, all things Obama, Obama world, and I respect all that. I voted for him, campaigned for him, all that kind of good stuff, but I'm no longer on the island with him. And I think, you know, the comment you just made about he cannot make sweeping decisions and wave the magic wand, all of that kind of stuff, it's just ludicrous, because he did wave the magic wand by granting, like, gays, you know, giving them the right to get married and things like that. I think that's biblical.
No, he didn't, actually. That was the Supreme Court. But go ahead.
Yeah, right. But that's on to him. But the thing is that he did make these sweeping decisions to correct something that's been religiously banned for thousands of years. he waved the wand with that. He also waved the wand.
But wait a minute. Here's the thing. I hate to hold on, everybody. I hate to interrupt you, but I hate to hear you keep repeating something that's not true. No, he didn't. That was the Supreme Court. So you keep saying, he did.
Did he not say that he believes in civil union? Did he not say that?
He could have said he believed in Bigfoot. That doesn't mean Bigfoot's going to come walking out of the woods. The Supreme Court did it, not him. And they don't even like him.
Does he not wave the magic wand with the Jews? He with Israel? Yes, he does. But he has the He has the chutzpah. I know I've called this to your show. I know you have complete control of your show. You can hang up any time, and I respect that. But, and I know, again, I know that this is Obama land, and I respect that, too. So you should be ashamed of yourself by making some of those ridiculous comments in support of him when actually he's defenseless with his treatment towards black people. Thank you, and I'll listen to your... offline.
Thank you very much for calling. I certainly appreciate you listening to the show. Well, I mean, I understand how you're saying, but here is.
I don't think this is Obama land. I think we've been critical of President Obama. You know, Garland and I, back when we were on the Raucous Caucus, housed an intervention for him when we thought he was caving in too much to Republicans. He's done some good things. He's done some bad things. And in terms of waving the magic wand, the answer is he can only do it to a point. He can issue executive orders. He can't change immigration law. All of Cuba, he can't even end the entire boycott.
He didn't make gay marriage legal.
He changed his own personal view that he did.
Mm-hmm. And stated it.
He stated it, actually, after Joe Biden stated it. And then after that happened, and the Supreme Court basically said that these other court decisions, all of which, by the way, are based on a 5-4 decision of a mostly right-wing Supreme Court that I mostly criticize. in this case, the Supreme Court has said we're not going to review these lower court cases, and that's how gay people got married all across the country. Yes, President Obama changed his view. And yes, in changing his view, he persuaded many people using the bully pulpit. But he didn't change the law. He simply changed people's minds.
And let me say this to Bridget, because it's interesting, because when she said this is Obama land and you love Obama, whatever, here's my position on that. I'm a nuanced person, okay? I don't know President Obama. He seems like a nice guy to me. For all I know, he could be a jerk. I don't know. But here's what I do know. If he does something that I think is good, I'm going to say, man, that's really good. If he does something that I think is bad, I'm going to say, man, that's really bad. If he does something that I don't like, I'm going to get on the air and I'm going to say, well, that's terrible. How could he do such a thing? And the next day, if he does something wonderful, I'm going to say it was wonderful. I'm not this absolutist person. I don't believe in absolutism. I don't believe in where you say that person is. They're all bad. Or George Bush. Hey, AIDS in Africa. PEPFAR. Wonderful thing. If a person does something you like, why do you block a person off and say this person has to be either absolutely bad or absolutely good? You have to support the quote person, or you have to hate or dislike the person, because you pick out individual things. Even a stop clock is right twice a day. So whether or not, whatever you like think of or not think about Obama, if he does something good, why not say it's good? And if he does something bad, why not say it's bad?
I'm not sure I caught the caller's name. I think it was Betsy.
Bridget. Bridget.
That's right. It's Bridget.
You're down in Nashville. I imagine a lot of people named Betsy in Nashville.
Mark. No, I apologize. Bridget, I would say this. Listen to our show. Listen every Friday at 6. Go back if you want. Look at old archives. They're all there. Every one of the 1,000 radio shows I've done are all on my website, marklevinetalk.com. Look up Obama intervention on my website. I have not been shy about criticizing President Obama where I think he's done wrong or not gone far enough. In fact, this hour, when they had a caller call in on civil rights, I said, he's done this, but he could have done more.
Right.
He hasn't done enough. I think the glass is half full, and you can talk about the good parts, and I talk about the bad parts, and that's what I've always done ever since he's been president.
I don't understand. I'm with you. I don't even understand the concept of saying he's a good guy or a bad guy, or we should support him, quote, or not support him. I don't know him. That's between him and his wife and his kids and his family. I'm talking about what he does, what I like, and what I don't like. I'm talking about what he does, not who he is. Marcus, we got room for one more call, Marcus. We only got a minute or so.
All right, quickly. I kind of joined your conversation late, but I wanted to talk about the Cuban thing. Whenever black people talk, Yeah,
I'm having a lot of trouble hearing you, Marcus, unfortunately. I certainly, it sounds like you're riding down the road. Maybe the windows are open or something like that. That's actually what it sounds like, and we can't hear you. So I really want to hear if you can next week, because we got to get ready to go. But if next week, if you can call us, maybe if you can pull over somewhere, put the windows up, you know what I mean? Maybe get a little bit, maybe turn the heat up or something and get a little bit more silence. We certainly do want to hear you, and we certainly appreciate you calling. But, you know, we couldn't go on our last call there when we really couldn't understand what you're saying. Mark, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, what do they do?
Go to marklevinetalk.com. That's my website. There you'll find all the shows where I criticize as well as praise Obama. You can also follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk, MarkLevineTalk.
And Garland Nixon, it's garlandin@gmail.com, at Garland Nixon on Twitter, garlandin, the N is for Nixon, @gmail.com, or Garland Nixon on Facebook. We got plenty to talk about next week at 7 o'clock. Holy moly! The prosecutor in Ferguson has admitted that clearly some of the witnesses were not telling the truth. What do you know about it? Clearly, he said. Well, do you think? Okay, we can talk about that next. We got plenty to talk about next Friday. Mark,
he'll
be available
happy
next Friday.
Happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, have a wonderful holiday season.
All right.
This program can.
Hello, I'm Roach.
I don't know how good the show was, but I had a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to the just completed Public Affairs or News program. As a listener-sponsored community radio station, WPFW appreciates your feedback, whether favorable or otherwise. To provide your feedback, even if it is regarding one of our many music programs, simply email us at info@wpfw.org. That's info@wpfw.org. Thanks.